So, a friend gave me a piano recently. I mean, friends do that, right? They give pianos. I mean, we give kombucha starter and we do Pampered Chef parties, so piano seemed like it makes sense. Second time someone had given me a piano. My parents brought a piano home. Oh, I gotta forward that. There's the one that my friend gave me, or close to that. But when I was 6 or 7, my folks brought home this piano. I think it was made in 1902, and it weighed more than a VW bus. And I started taking piano lessons, and I took piano lessons for 10 or 12 years, something like that. Now, I want to assure you that I enjoyed playing the piano, and I sort of like practicing, but I have very little talent. So when I graduated from high school and went to college, I left the piano behind. I really didn't play hardly at all since that time. So when my friend gave me this piano, I thought, am I going to remember anything? I knew I could read music yet. That's easy to tell. But I thought, are my fingers going to do what my brain is seeing and my eyes are seeing? My finger's going to be able to do this. Well, I was rusty, you can imagine. But I was very pleasantly surprised to find out that my fingers remembered things my brain didn't even remember. I was doing things I kind of forgot about that. So that's muscle memory. We all kind of know something about muscle memory. It's like if you learn to ride a bike, you can ride a bike. Roller skate, you can roller skate. Well, I'm going to suggest to you tonight that there is a spiritual muscle memory as well. Because muscle memory is really about learning something and then using it later. And you're able to recall that skill later. So I think spiritually, things that we've experienced in the past help us handle things that happen today or in the future. And it can help as we're going to talk about hardships a little bit. But we need to talk about, where am I? Okay, we're not even there yet, so I'm doing okay with my clicker. Okay, I think there's two basic definitions of hope. One of them we use all the time. It's a wish, it's a desire. I hope you have a great trip. I hope it rains before my garden dies. That idea. Any of you said that this summer? But we can't make it happen. It's just expressing our desire for it. It's not a confidence. But there's a second kind of hope that we can talk about, and we're going to focus on tonight, and that was a confidence in the future. It is knowing this thing is going to happen. Something is going to happen in the future. That kind of confidence or assurance can only come from God. We can't keep those kind of promises, but God can. And so we're going to be talking about that kind of hope. The other kind of hope, you'll use it all the time. And it's tricky to tell the difference. So I wanted to differentiate. I'm going to be talking about God's hope as I go through this. And I will say to you that we can expect God, what he's done in the past, he'll do now, and he'll do in the future. That he'll do it again, what he's done in the past. So that idea of muscle memory is the idea of knowing that hardships are going to happen. We're all going to have hardships. They will vary. We won't all have the same intensity or the same kind, but we'll have them. But I will say to you, can we have the kind of hope that we can count on when a hardship hits us? And I think it comes through some kind of muscle memory. It's a little easier if we've learned to do something in the past. Now, I don't think we need to experience every hardship ourselves, because we can also learn from others' hardships. And that's actually, Anne mentioned the book that I worked on, and that's actually something I saw there, watching, listening to how people work through hardships in their lives and maintained a faith in God. So I think we can learn from stories. So I want to talk to you about Hannah. The story of Hannah is found in the Old Testament, 1 Samuel chapters 1 and 2, roughly 3,500 years ago. She was an Israelite, lived in Canaan, in the Promised Land where the Israelites lived at that time. She was a very well-loved wife, but she had no children. In that culture at that time, it was assumed Children are a blessing from God. So, if you have no children, God is displeased with you. You have done something wrong to offend God. So she carried that shame with her. Added to that, something we'll understand, there was no legacy, no one who would carry on her future, and no one to care for her. They didn't have what we have today as we get older. If you didn't have children, you didn't have anyone to care for you in your old age. So she was carrying a double burden. That's in her culture, that was a heavy, heavy hardship. So her family, or excuse me, her husband was a very devout man, and he took his family every year to the festival. They went to a festival, Festival of Booths, and it was they went to Shiloh. That's where the tabernacle was at that time, and they went, gathered with other Israelites, to celebrate, to thank God for the harvest. This was after the harvest. They would thank God. And they would also remember what God had done in the past. They remembered specifically how God had heard the Israelites cry in Egypt. When the Israelites were in Egypt, they were enslaved, they were oppressed, and they cried out to God in desperation, and God heard them and brought them out of Egypt to this land where Hannah lived. Okay, so at this festival, Hannah is reminded of that story. And I think it gave her the courage to do what she did next, which, because remember, the culture told her she had displeased God. But she had the courage to go into the tabernacle and cry out to God, just like her ancestors had done. I think she learned from them God would listen to her. So she went into the tabernacle and she cried out to God. If you remember, the priest thought she was drunk. That's how passionate she was. But God did hear her cries for help. And he gave her a son, Samuel. We may be familiar with that, a prophet. But he also gave her three more sons and two daughters after that. So I think what we today even can learn from Hannah is that we can learn like Hannah did from people in the past. She knew that God would listen to her and he would respond in some way to her prayers, and she had courage to do that. I think it was her spiritual muscle memory that allowed her to trust God, that he would do what he had done in the past. Hope means trusting God will be in our future. So Jeremiah gives us a promise that really applies to Hannah, but I think we can grab it in our own lives as well. Jeremiah writes, "For I know the plans I have for you." I know this is probably familiar to some of you, but I want you to really zone in on, "I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. They're plans for good. They're plans for good and not disaster, to give you a future and a hope. In those days, when you pray, I will listen." I just think that Hannah understood that enough to ask. And God says, "This is who I am." Okay, so I want to tell you my story. 28 years ago, my husband and I tried for almost 3 years for me to get pregnant. Almost 3 years. I finally did. And of course, whoopee, we're happy. And then six or seven weeks into the pregnancy, I miscarried. I had never had that kind of a loss in my life before. And I was absolutely devastated. I came home from the hospital. I was empty physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. I just went numb. And it wasn't so much I was mad at God. It was just, I just wasn't close. Just wasn't close to God. I spent several months in that numb state. Everybody thought I was doing fine. You can hide that. You know you can't. But several months after that, we went on a camping trip. And you know, I want to tell you, vacations and retreats, things like that, are really good for us because they cause us to rethink what we're doing. You know how you get in the rut? You do the same thing every day. And suddenly you go somewhere different, and it's like you rethink things. And that's what happened to me. I remember sitting around a campfire and just looking at the flames. I mean, we were up in the mountains, and I just thought, I miss God. I miss God. And I went and got my Bible. It's the only time I'd open my Bible since a miscarriage, except at church so everybody would know I was doing fine. And I opened my Bible and went to the Psalms. That's a great place to go when you just are really emotional. There's a lot of just authentic Psalms. So I went to the Psalms and started reading. And I told God, I think I miss you. And it was like he was sitting right beside me at that campfire. And he says, I've been here the whole time. I'm just waiting. There was no condemnation. It was just, I'm just waiting for you. And we're going to go through this together when you're ready. And so I began a healing process. And in that process, I learned I never wanted to be numb to God again. That's something I learned from that experience. No matter what happened to me, I didn't want to just shut God off ever again. So since that time, I've lost both my parents. I've lost a 7-year-old grandson. And I just could hear God whispering, I haven't forsaken you. I'm right here. We're going to go through this together. So at the end of January of this year, I took my husband Matt to the ER. He was having abdominal pain. Went there, they ran tests, all kinds of things. Couldn't find anything. Finally decided, I think he passed a kidney stone, sent him home, and he didn't have any pain the next morning, so I thought, okay, that's what it was. 2 weeks later, the doctor called and said, you know, there's something on that scan that doesn't look right. I want you to come in for another scan. They saw a shadow on his kidney. So, went in, got another scan, found out he had kidney cancer. The treatment is for kidney cancers to remove the kidney. So they immediately scheduled him, and we said, okay, we'll get that kidney. Yes, you can live with one kidney. So we said, well, we can do this. We'll be okay. So March 1st, he went in, he had kidney removed, surgeon came out, told me, I think everything's fine. I didn't see anything weird. I don't think the cancer has broken out, so I think we're okay. So, okay, we come home. He's healing actually really well from the surgery. 2 weeks later, we get a call. No, the kidney had broken out. So then we had just a series of trips to doctors to schedule chemo, schedule radiation. Found out they couldn't start any of it for 6 weeks. So March 1st would be the middle of April before they could do anything because his body had to heal from the surgery. And so then by late March, he was having more pain. Doctors said, I think it's an infection. So they gave him some pretty high-powered antibiotics. Pain continued. They gave him some pretty high-powered painkillers. He started to have swelling in his abdomen. He said, we're not real sure what's going on here. So they finally, this was April 13th of this year, they said, we're going to take you in, we're going to drain some of that fluid, we're going to find out what this is about. So we spent the next 10 days in the hospital. Poor guy ran all kinds of tests. They drew fluid off his belly 4 different times. They did, his pain just got worse and worse and worse. April 22nd, he went in on the 13th, on the 22nd. I came in that morning, and I was, I guess, medically naive. Because I kept thinking, okay, they're going to find this. He's going to turn around. I went in that morning, like I did every morning, to go see him, and there's staff around his bed, and they said he had a bad night. Okay, so I started asking questions. And I finally said, do I need to call the kids? And they said, yes. So all the kids, all 6 of them. One's in Florida. The other 5 were able to get there. Several of his siblings, different family members, some friends even were able to come in that day. And we were able to pray with him, read Bible verses to him, all these kinds of things with him, spent the day with him. He passed early on the morning of April 23rd. Tell you what, it felt like those hospital walls were like a ton of bricks on me. It just crashed in on me. I wasn't expecting that at all. It was just really, really heavy. And came home to an empty house. And he's everywhere in the house, you know? I mean, he still had dirty clothes in the laundry hamper. You know, I mean, it was just weird. The back door has a squeak to it. You hear the back door open, I thought, oh, he's home. Oh, no. It was just an empty, empty, empty time. And Yeah, I mean, my brain just was crazy. That first month was crazy. I mean, it was just, It was really hard to make decisions. My body was just weak and trembling. It was just a lot of really things that I went through. And so many details to take care of. And he was the detail guy. He was really good at detail. Me, I'm not so good at details. But I had to take on all these details. And at the same time, miss him day by day by day. And I wanted to finish my book. A year ago, they'd asked me to speak at this conference, over a year ago. I'd start doing research, just like Ann said. She described it really well. And so in the fall, I started writing this book. And I had pretty well finished at least the first draft of this book before we went through all this medical stuff. And in May, I just thought, I need to finish this book. He had read most of it and just been so incredibly encouraging. And really said, this is important. You need to get this done. So I finished it. I got it edited, got it formatted. It's published. You can see it back there. And I wanted to speak to you guys tonight. And I just said, okay, I think I have a different message than what I originally expected. It's still about hope. It's definitely about hope. Yeah, the book is full of people who have gone through things that I've just went through, and worse, and walked out with hope. I think sometimes I say, how in the world am I standing, or how am I talking about? I've had several people, how are you doing this? How are you going through this day to day? I don't know. I'm not anything special, I want to tell you that. But I every morning, I start out with time with the Lord. And I say, okay, God, what are we doing today together? And he just continues to whisper, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. And so I think I learned from the miscarriage, that was something personal in my life. And I learned at that point, I never wanted to be separated from God. And I think through these stories that I read and researched in the last year, I learned more about the presence of God. These people had, yeah, they had lots of hardships. One thing that, and this is almost cliche because I usually go beyond this, but the 23rd Psalm really has been a comfort to me. And so I've started going back to it a lot of mornings and just reading it again. And so I kind of highlighted parts of it. Can you guys see it? I can get out of your way a little bit here. I know it's familiar to you, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but you know, the Lord is my shepherd. He's a caretaker to us. He takes care of us. I shall not want. He takes care of everything I need. And I want you to look what the Lord does. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness for his namesake. Those are actions that God does to me, to us, if we just let him. The very core of the psalm is this. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Why will I fear no evil? For you are with me. That's what I learned in that campfire, sitting there. He says, I've been here the whole time. And he said, he wasn't condemning me. He just said, I'm just waiting. And when you're ready, I just felt him say that. When you're ready, I'm going to give you this big God hug. And he did. It took time, but he did. I fear no evil. You're with me. You comfort me. The psalm ends with this. Surely goodness and mercy. That's God. Sometimes we get confused about who God is. And we think he's this guy that's just waiting for us to make a mistake, then he's going to pound on our heads. That's not what scriptures tell us. That's not what his word tells us. He says, surely goodness and mercy. And that's what I saw beside that campfire. Will follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And that's my commitment to him now. I'm in his house right now, and I'm going to be there forever. That just really encourages me. I'll say to you, the better we know God, the more we can choose to trust him for our future. The ways you can do it, I've just talked about. You can read my book if you want to. That'd be fine with me, but you don't have to. Scripture is full of stories about people who have gone through hardships. Scriptures are full of descriptions of how God loves us and the plans he has for us. Today, we have books, we've got speakers, we've got other Christians we can sit and talk to. We have so many resources to help us know about who God is. So yeah, I go through each day. God gives me hope for that day. I don't worry about the next month. I worry about today, every day. God, can I get through today? And you know, he is so faithful, and he's gotten me through. And as I said, I started out with Hannah, and I just look at her sometimes and say, yeah, God was with her. That was a heavy burden she had. That hurt. And he was with her. He's the same God he was to her, same God he is to me. We don't do this journey perfectly. We're going through this life. We don't do it perfectly, but we don't need to do it perfectly. We just need to know who does it perfectly and trust him. God promises to remain with us. I believe through the choices that we make now, each day, we can learn to trust that God will be in our future. I really believe we can learn hope that we can count on.